The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
We can't take this madness any longer. Eye for an eye, bomb for a bomb. How can prayers for peace be answered while the battle rages on? No more, no, no more nightmares. No more, no, no more bomb scares. For the sake of the ones we love. Shalom, shalom.
Good morning, I hope you all know you're listening to Jewish Perspectives on Politics and the News with me, Bert Siegel. One of the things that I really like about doing this show is the people who I get to interview. Somebody once said to me, do you only interview your friends? I said, well, you know, thank God I have a lot of friends. My guest today is actually, I won't say an old friend because Rabbi Hirsch is not that old, but we've known each other for a very long time. I think I probably met you, Richard, when you were a student at Recon.
So yes. It
goes back a number of years. Richard has done a number of very, I think, impressive things. He was the editor of the Reconstructionist magazine. He was the executive director of the Board of Rabbis. He's been an international rabbi because he was a rabbi in Toronto, been in Chicago, New York, here in Philadelphia. He's a very good writer. He's got a great sense of humor, at least I enjoy his humor. I don't know that everybody else does, but not everybody enjoys my humor. So it just proves that there are some people who don't have taste. Part of the show, of course, is about what is in the news. And what is in the news a lot lately is the fact that Christmas and Hanukkah are actually coming on the same day in the secular calendar. I was trying to explain to somebody the other day about a lunar calendar. It's hard to explain, but a number of my Christian friends are excited that Christmas and Hanukkah come out on the same day. And they said, oh, isn't it wonderful? And I said, well, yeah, it's kind of interesting. I guess in some ways it is wonderful. It does tend to blur the significance of Hanukkah and Christmas. But I think the attitude, at least in the Jewish community, about what used to be called the Christmas dilemma is not looked upon as being the dilemma it once was. I think the dilemma often was for Jewish families, at least for my generation, what do we do about Christmas? Do we acknowledge it with our children? Or do we take them to see Santa Claus, etc.? A friend of mine once told me that he was in the mall and Santa approached his son, asked him what he wanted for Christmas. And the young man said, well, I don't want anything for Christmas. I'm Jewish. And Santa said to him, well, that's all right. Santa loves all little boys and girls if they're good. And he said to the father, is he good? He said, yes, he is. And the little boy said, well, okay, Santa, I'll take a Nintendo and a bicycle. So I guess if Santa was going to discriminate as who he was going to bestow with gifts, even little Jewish boys could get I don't think he got either one.
Right. So little Jewish boys and girls can be equally disappointed when what they asked for is replaced by underwear and pajamas.
That's right. Anyhow, but what I asked Richard, I've known Richard to always be one of the job says that he was the executive board of rabbis. But before that, he was on the staff of the Jewish Community Relations Council, which some of you may know I was the executive director once in my youth. And I've always known Richard to be a thoughtful guy and somebody who I would just like to discuss things with because he always had a kind of sharp perspective about what matters to not only to the Jewish community, but particularly the Jewish community. So I invited Richard to be on today to talk about, is there still such a thing as a Christmas dilemma? What does he think impact does the observance or the recognition of Christmas, which is really so ubiquitous. What does it mean the Jewish families today who are raising Jewish kids? I know my son and daughter-in-law were saying, well, you know, what do? You can't ignore it. On the other hand, you don't want the kids to feel that they're being left out. I know when I was a kid, I had Christmas envy. My family did not recognize Christmas. We came from a quite observant family. And everybody seemed to be enjoying something that I was denied. You know, I survived it. But Richard, what's your take on the quote dilemma? And is it still a dilemma? But before I do that, if you would take just a couple of minutes, I always like to have my guests tell the audience, what is it that made them the person they are? What made them choose the career they chose? And what it is that still matters to them. So please just take a couple of minutes and share with us who is the other Richard Hirsch. There was a rabbi, Richard Hirsch, I believe he passed away, was a very prominent Reform rabbi. This is my friend, Richard Hirsch. Richard, welcome.
Thanks very much, Bert. It's nice to be with you and with your listeners on this December 24th. The other rabbi, Richard Hirsch, by the way, to give him the appropriate respect, he ought to have Richard G. Hirsch, he spelled it H-I-R-S-C-H, was for many, many, many years the executive director of the World Union for Progressive Judaism, which is the International Association of Liberal Progressive Congregations. We'd call them Reform in the U.S., outside of North America. So I was very honored to share my name with him. He had the C, I didn't have the C, and we got a lot of each other's mail over the years. So let me begin by in addition to thanking you for the invitation, say that you and I grew up with different experiences. I might as well get this out of the way early in the conversation. I did not grow up with Christmas envy because in my home, we celebrated Christmas. This was not an unusual thing for people born in my era. I was born in 1953. Growing up on Long Island, there were lots and lots of Jewish families that celebrated Christmas. But let me be clear what we did and what most of my friends who celebrated Christmas did. We had the tree because our family was a Reform Jewish family. I mean, no insult to Reform Jewish tradition. I just want to point out that my cousin's family was affiliated with a conservative synagogue. So they had all the decorations from the tree, the tinsel and the balls and all the other kinds of things hanging from the mantelpiece. We actually had the tree to hang the same stuff up. And when I was growing up, I thought the difference between Reform and conservative Judaism was how you celebrated Christmas. Right. So Reform Jews had a tree, you know, conservative Jews had all the tree decorations, but they didn't have the tree.
Yeah, my family, when we went out to Chinese food, though, we didn't eat treif.
Ah, well, you know, I grew up
in Chinese food. I mean, on Christmas Day.
Oh, that was, of course. That was no, I took that for granted. Yes, as my son, when he was little, once asked me, you know, being a good little Jewish kid, he said, so what's the halacha? What's the Jewish law on this? Do we go out for Chinese food on December 24th or December 25th? Right. So, but I want to be clear because I think it's something that went through an undulation and has arrived at a different place today, which is really your focus. Christmas back in the 1950s and 60s, where I grew up on Long Island, was a cultural event somewhat akin to Thanksgiving. There was no religious content to it. So it's not as if I felt in any way that my religious identity was bifurcated or that our family wasn't Jewish or that I wasn't still heading for a bar mitzvah. I knew I wasn't heading for communion or confirmation. It was sort of a feel-good brotherhood in those days that was gendered brotherhood of man. You know, it was a happy time of the year in which, you know, going out to look at the decorations or celebrating with friends was a pretty common thing, and getting presents wasn't a bad piece of it either. But it had no religious content to it. I think that the Jewish community, and especially as the rate of intermarriage increased in the 80s and 90s, went through a different kind of undulation with this, which is instead of it being two Jewish parents doing a kind of cultural appropriation of Christmas on a secular level, once you had interfaith families where one person continued to identify in their family of origin, so mostly Christian.
The majority of people who are getting married today are interfaith families.
Yes, but I think the turn of this started in the 1980s and 90s, and there kind of was a blurring of, you know, Jews marrying people who weren't Jewish for whom their Christianity was sort of, you know, a residual family memory or something like that, as opposed to they were active churchgoers. Mm-hmm. But I think that the intermarriage profile has changed somewhat so that, you know, believing Jews and believing Christians, I think more often now, find their way to each other in a way that they wouldn't have in the 80s or 60s. Where a serious religious difference, well, I still believe in this, well, I still believe in this, would have been more difficult to navigate. You know, two largely unobservant secular people, one Jewish, one Christian, wouldn't have run into a lot of things about getting married in the 60s or the 70s. But if they were both believers, you know, the identity of the children and so on would be more complicated. So I think that December dilemma, you know, had a multiple dimension to it. I think more recently, the last 20, 25 years, there's more indication, and my indication is anecdotal, I'm not a social scientist on this stuff, is that people who choose to marry people of a different faith, in this case, Jewish and Christian, will often participate in mutual worship. You know, the synagogue on Friday night and or Saturday, church on Sunday. We have lots of friends personally and their kids that we know who grew up in that kind of situation. You know, one of whom was the head of USY in Philadelphia when she was growing up, although her dad's Episcopalian. Her mom is Jewish. The kids were raised Jewish, but they went to church with their dad pretty regularly on Sundays. When we were raising our kids, and I still hear this spoken about today, we would say to them that, you know, Christmas is kind of like going to your friend's birthday party. You're happy for them. You bring a present. You celebrate. It's nice they invited you. But remember, it's not your birthday. It's their birthday. Yeah, we have young friends locally who have a 3.5-year-old and a little baby who's almost one. And their kids attend a Spanish immersion daycare program. And Christmas is really prevalent there. So they're navigating with their 3.5-year-old this year, this same kind of, this is a very nice holiday. It's not our holiday, but, you know, we can enjoy being with our friends who are celebrating that holiday. So that's often how we navigated the distinction. I don't know that that was always what kids wanted to hear, because the next question would be, does that mean we don't get presents?
Well, also the other thing is, I mean, when I was a kid, yeah, I'm 81 years old. When I was a kid, we got presents, but they weren't of the same level as the Christmas presents. You know, we didn't get big presents. Yeah. I didn't know anybody who got a bicycle for Hanukkah. You know, my family, we were a little bit above just the Hanukkah gelt, but, you know, maybe I got a book, also a Jewish theme. I think at a certain point there was a need to raise the level of the Hanukkah gift because of, again, the Christmas envy.
Right. Well, this is something you and I have discussed over the years. My guess is your listeners are well aware of it. So if I can introduce that issue at the moment, you tell me if you want to go in a different direction. But I think many Jewish families have heard it preached from pulpits or reflected in editorials in Jewish newspapers or whatever, you know, listening to the authorities, meaning rabbis, telling them that Hanukkah isn't an important holiday.
Right? Well, you know, I don't know if you were in Philadelphia then or not, but I actually had a piece in The Exponent saying, you know, in my family, we made a big deal of a Hanukkah. We invited our friends. We had a party. We decorated the house. But we talked about the story of Hanukkah, and we raised, and I did get flack from some rabbis because, again, that was counter to what the rabbis were saying. It's not a big deal. The big deal is Yom Kippur.
Right. Well, I would argue that the big deal is Yom Kippur, but the contrast I like to give is with the holiday of Shavuot, which usually occurs in late May or June. Now, you know, from the point of view of Jewish tradition, Shavuot is right up there with Passover and with Sukkot because it's one of the three so-called pilgrimage festivals. But because Shavuot doesn't have anything particularly enticing attached to it ritually, right? Pesach has the Seder and the Matzah. Sukkot has the Sukkah booth and the lulav and all kinds of things. You can invite people over for 7 nights of dinner and you can sleep outside in the Sukkah. Shavuot has, cheesecake and blintzes. Now, I've got nothing against cheesecake and blintzes, even though I'm vegan. But, if you're trying to sell that to a kid, it's kind of like getting underwear and socks, as a present. Shavuot is a major holiday on the Jewish official calendar and a relatively minor unknown one in the practical Jewish calendar of how American Jews live, except for the holiday that where confirmation takes place in synagogues that have confirmation. But most people coming to that don't know that it's, on Shavuot. They know it's confirmation. So, when you get into the discussion of what's an important Jewish holiday, not to get all academic about this with you, you're into the discussion of what sociologists call folk and elite religion. So elite religion is what the traditional sources say and what the authorities say and the academics say and maybe what the rabbis say. And folk religion is what people do. So, rabbis can jump up and down and they've been doing it for thousands of years about, we don't do that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't, it's not, we don't believe in that. It's like telling someone whose family in every generation has tied a red ribbon around the birthing bed when someone's delivering a baby at the end of a pregnancy, telling them that, oh, that's superstitious and Jews don't do that. Well, they say, well, in our family, we do that. Right? So who owns the definition of what's an important holiday? So this is where Jewish parents were ahead of the official authorities because they recognized that in, I don't want to say combating, but in trying to help Jewish kids navigate the Christmas onslaught every December in America, which has only gotten worse since you and I grew up. I'm 10 years younger than you, but we both grew up with that. Elevating Hanukkah to something more elaborate, trying to make it more fun, making it a time, especially in our family, it was a big deal because it was the one time all the cousins and the aunts and the uncles all got together. Right? So we associated just the emotional enjoyment of the whole family getting together around Hanukkah was not a bad strategy. It didn't make Hanukkah into something it wasn't. It simply elevated the potential in Hanukkah to be something that it was always capable of becoming.
And what's interesting? I remember after I wrote that article saying to a rabbi whose name I will not mention, who really came down hard on me, and I said, you know what? I'm going to take every opportunity to celebrate being Jewish. And if that means, having a big party, we're going to do it. I'm going to sing songs. And we're going to tell people to bring their Hanukkah with them. And I tried to explain to him, it told my kids that, being Jewish was a good thing. And he still didn't get it.
But it was also, Bert, I think a chance for, and this was true when I was growing up, because I grew up in a largely non-Jewish part of Long Island. I know that may be hard for Philadelphia listeners to imagine that there were non-Jewish pockets of Long Island back in the 60s, but I lived in one of them. And our family was always intent both on inviting our neighbors who were by and large not Jewish. We were the only Jewish family on the block. But also I was encouraged to invite friends from school to come at night, during Hanukkah to participate in the candle lighting. It was partly, and then again, this is the 1950s and 60s. It was partly our way of assimilating, and I mean that in a positive sense, integrating into the larger American culture. By not only borrowing their holidays, which, I have mixed feelings about, and certainly some of our neighbors who were Catholic had mixed feelings about Catholic Christians. Had mixed feelings about the Christmas tree in our window. And, now in the age of cultural appropriation and borrowing other people's traditions without asking them, it sounds a little bit different. But inviting them in to see like what we did and to share that was helpful.
The rate of intermarriage today is, obviously with the exception of the Orthodox community, although we both know people who grew up in very traditional families, who are now involved in interfaith marriages. But it's my impression that whereas in the past there was a tendency for the Jewish partner to kind of adapt to Christianity, if not actually converting, it's more common today than when I was coming up for it to be a Jewish household, that the pressure, you know, Hyman Rickover, who my father thought of was a great hero, converted. A number of very prominent Jews we found out had Christian funerals, the people who we thought is prominent Jews. It's my impression, I don't know if you share this or not, but increasingly in interfaith couples, the Jewish component of that relationship is much more significant than it was back in my day. Do you think that's true?
It's an interesting question, and I think a good observation. I would reframe it slightly. I think there was a stage, and it's still represented in the contemporary community, where people tried to kind of reduce differences and merge traditions. And, you know, a symbol of that is, like, you know, the Christmas tree decorations that are really Jewish decorations, the dreidel you can hang on your Christmas tree, right? The menorah, right? The Hanukkah or the menorah that goes on top of the Christmas tree, which is kind of a visual of what you're describing as an idea. In other words, the Christmas tree is the dominant, but we hang a few Jewish trinkets on it, you know, to say us too, right? My impression, again, it's anecdotal. Among friends and family, and, you know, some congregants I've recently been involved with before I retired, is that there's more of a parallel rather than a synthesis. In other words, like, we don't have to hang the menorah on the Christmas tree. The menorah stands on its own. Hanukkah has its own integrity. Christmas has its own integrity. We can take both seriously in an interfaith home. We don't have to try to, like, say it's all the same. You know, Rachel Cowan, Rabbi Rachel Cowan, who passed away a few years ago, wrote once that what Jews don't understand when a Christian chooses to become Jewish is it's not about Judaism and Christianity for them. It's about Judaism and Christmas. Yes. And I think almost every rabbi will tell you, again, anecdotally, of being involved in a conversion conversation with someone who starts out Christian, who listens to all of the intellectual and cerebral stuff and reads all the books, and at the end, at the beginning, and in the middle, says to us, but will I still be able to celebrate Christmas? Right. Because
I just had that conversation with somebody who's in the process.
Because that's...
They said, well, maybe I could have a small Christmas tree that nobody outside can see.
Right. You
know, see it through the window.
Right. And you see that kind of, you know, emerge in popular culture. So if you go back to the late 1980s, the early 1990s on the TV show 30-something, where they have an episode that's like the gift of the Magi, Michael, the Jewish guy, brings home a Christmas tree for his wife. And when he comes in the door, the non-Jewish wife is lighting the menorah, right? That's a very different cultural message than the TV show, whose name slips my mind now, a couple of years ago, more than a couple of years ago, that invented the holiday called Chrismukkah, right? Which is different from, you know, Seinfeld's Festivus. But Chrismukkah was an attempt to kind of make a joke out of this. Whereas the 30-something take on it, you know, 30 years ago or more, was, you know, both deserve recognition, but also respectful, like, you know, reducing everything to a joke. You know, if you go on Google or Amazon, you put in Jewish and Christmas, you get all kinds of kitsch, right? All kinds of tchotchkes, right? Whereas the book I was trying to find that I want to recommend to your listeners, there's a book called A Kosher Christmas. How's that for a title? by two Jewish scholars, Eli Plaut, Plaut, and Jonathan Sarna, Sarna, A Kosher Christmas. And it traces the history of Christmas in Jewish homes and families over the last 150 years in the United States. So
I have to get that.
Yeah, if you want to get a deeper sense of how Christmas has played out, I think that's a good place to look.
Unfortunately, we are in the last 5 minutes. Is there any, and I don't say this facetiously, is there any wisdom you want to, you're a rabbi, you know?
Yeah, well, Well, I don't know, that rabbi and wisdom always correlate, but I'll take a shot at it. You'll tell me later if it was smart or not. I think one of the things that families miss in reappropriating Hanukkah, and this is true in Jewish families as well as interfaith families, where someone is present who's Jewish, is that Hanukkah has multiple messages. The kids' message of it is about the little oil that lasted for 8 days, and and then there's the games of dreidel, which is really pretty boring, actually, in my personal opinion. If you like dreidel, I hope I haven't offended you. But there's an adult level of Hanukkah that, in this moment in which we're living, ought to be part of the conversation, which is that Hanukkah, historically, in its first incarnation, when the story takes place, is as much about infighting among Jews as it is about Jews trying to preserve their culture in a hostile environment. In other words, there's a piece of Jews losing the awareness that they have more in common than separates them. And so the message of Hanukkah, got debated. So is it a military victory that's celebrated, or is it a spiritual victory? And so the emergence of the menorah as the symbol of Hanukkah, instead of a sword like the Maccabees would have used to win their war, tells us that the spiritual message is the one that's dominant. Mm-hmm. And if we keep focused on that, maybe the wisdom of this season is, in both traditions, Judaism and Christianity, we need to make sure that the spiritual message doesn't get lost in the cultural and family celebrations. There's something serious in each of these stories, and it deserves to be preserved.
You know what, that if I asked you to hold your wisdom any longer, we would have missed it. I'm being signaled that we are down to the last minute. As always, Richard, you have not disappointed me one iota. You number one, it's great seeing you. We have to get together, say hi at home. We wish everybody a joyous Hanukkah. If you celebrate Christmas, have a wonderful Christmas.
We say in our house, an enlightening Hanukkah.
I like that. I like that. And you know what? The story of how the Jewish people during that period were fighting each other is also one we should think about. The way we fight over what's right for Israel is, I think, tragic. We may disagree about the government of Israel, but I think it is incumbent upon us to still care deeply about our brothers and sisters in Israel. All over the world, we should care about everybody, but I think we should think about what this is doing to Israel.
Agreed.
So that'll be.